Good morning, everybody. So we are in we're going from the Shaila archives. So we're looking through Shaila's real life questions that have that happened, and then try to spend a little bit of time looking at them. This is a very fascinating topic, and that is the topic of, does the state of a patient with dementia need to give tzedakah? This is a Shaila which has happened a number of times, and unfortunately is pretty relevant. So let's jump in. But before we do, I want to start by thanking Chaya and Josh, who are sponsoring today's share, as we think fondly about the yahrzeit of Josh's father, Meir David Ben Harav Yehoshua. I believe this is now the fourth yahrzeit, third yahrzeit. I just remember it was COVID. That was during the time. And I had the good fortune of getting to meet him a number of times on many wonderful occasions, smachot, and a very special person who was much larger than the frame of his body. Was a very, very special human being. He was actually born in Sosnowitz, Poland. He was one of nine children. His father was the chief rabbi of the town. There were about 35,000 Jews in the town at the time. And on Hanukkah in 1942, the Jews were told to assemble in a local football stadium, obviously with mal intent. And he and his brother were separated from the Nazis, and his mother was very distressed about this. And instead of being upset, his father said, at least there'll be two children to say, somebody to say Kaddish for us. And he went from concentration camp to concentration camp to concentration camp, going through five in total, and survived, was liberated by the U.S. on the Eastern Front. And when he came to Switzerland, he was for Simchas Torah in 1945, he received a telegram from his brother, that one who'd been separated with, who survived. There were only two surviving members of the family, and what his father said was true. He was able to say Kaddish for his family. But not only did he say Kaddish, he made Kiddush. And so he and his wife, Lorraine, when they arrived in the United States, when they got married in 1951, they had three children, grandchildren and great-grandchildren, Baruch Hashem, who continued to be Mekaddish Shem Shemayim in this world. Nishmasai Eden. Thank you for sharing for this moment in time. So let's here's a question. This is a question asked me a number of months ago, but I had the good fortune of having to research it in the last week. I'll tell you, I asked the question, answered the question then at the time, but I had a chance to do a little more digging as to the reasons and the logic behind it, which I'd like to share with everybody today. So the question is about a woman who is the executor, or really the guarantor, for her mother's estate. Her mother is in dementia, and to a pretty significant point, is not with it in any meaningful capacity, unfortunately. And she wants to know that there's the capital that's invested of the remaining estate. Her father just passed away a couple years before. The remaining assets are producing a certain amount of profit per cycle, but the costs, the medical costs, and the aid, and all the associated costs are more than the profits that are being yielded every cycle. And so the question is she was, the parents always makpid to give tzedakah, they always makpid to try to give ma'asek safim. Should they be giving ma'asek safim when it's essentially eating more and more and more into the actual assets itself, or the capital itself? That's the question that was asked in this particular case. Very complicated case, and those who are state attorneys deal with these kinds of issues all the time. Thank you, Suri, for being here.
I didn't know I was right.
So this is a very important area in general in life for people to be more aware of, and to have more conversations with estate attorneys long before it's necessary. Let's start with a topic, and the reason why it came up for me is that I just recently started learning the Daf HaShavua. And the Daf HaShavua is a wonderful program where, instead of doing seven daf a week and promptly, unfortunately, moving on to the next seven daf, which is harder to keep track of, the Daf HaShavua goes through half an amud a day with the Hachazara cycle built in. And it's a really wonderful movement. We actually have a Chabura in our shul, and I started doing it as well. And this last week was Kesubos Daf Memches. That was where we're up to. So the Gemara talks about the following instance. In fact, there's two instances the Gemara talks about which are very worthy of consideration. So the first case is, if you take a look at source one, is Rav Chista says in the name of Bar Ukva, Mi Shinishtata, a person who becomes unsound of mind. So in our case, this would be dementia. But a person who becomes unsound of mind, they no longer have their intellectual capacity. Based in the court system, Yordim Lenechasov will take possession of their assets. V'zonin amafarnas in his ishtoi ubanov uvenoisav v'davar acher, and will use their money to sustain their wife, children, and davar acher, and another consideration. Omelir Ravina Ravashi, so Ravina says to Ravashi, Maishno mehadatanya, how could this be different than the teaching in the Brisa which we know that Mishalach Lamedina Sayam, the Ishta Tavas Mazonas, based in Yordan and Nechasov, the Zonin and Mefarnis in his Ishta of Aloy, Bonov of Venoisov, Aloy Davar Acher. If a person is AWOL, a person has gone out to the sea, has gone for a trip, disappears, is not coming back. Meantime, his family is languishing behind, and there's no breadwinner, and there's no check coming in. So what do we do in such a situation? The Beis Din sets up a system where they take the person's assets and sustain the wife, but they do not use the assets for their children and davar acher, whatever the davar acher is. So essentially, Ravina is asking Rav Ashi, why is there a difference between a person who's lost their intellectual facilities to a person who is AWOL, a person who is absent? So the Gemara says, of course, there's a difference. Is there no difference between a person who leaves intentionally and then a person who does not leave intentionally? Now, the Gemara doesn't answer this. The Gemara says it should be obvious to us the difference. And one of the reasons, there's a lot of suggestions about as what this means. But the most basic idea that if you think about this is a person who left on a business trip and is not returning, for whatever reason, clearly left with a specific omission. He chose not to take care of his family. And therefore, what we do is we assume the basic minimum of what his responsibility would be as his responsibility in the ksuba, right? Which is sustaining his wife. Children, and this is an interesting question, is up to a certain age is not a responsibility. Up to a certain age is a responsibility. Beyond a certain age is not a responsibility. Interestingly enough, in halacha, that's pegged at 6. But Rav Moshe already talks about this and says that, you know, independence is a little bit more complicated today. You know, with millennials, it's around 33, you know. They start leaving the basement, you know. But the truth is that it's become a later stage. But nonetheless, and that's not actually a chiyuv that the Gemara will talk about, is a tikkunos usha later on, where there's a responsibility. The ksuba is the responsibility of the husband to take financial responsibility of the wife, that they will demand, but beyond that, not. But when it comes to a person who's yotzei shelo ladas, a person, unfortunately, we know in these situations, a person who goes into a state of, let's say, dementia, there's no point in which they're leaving, right? It's a slow and very painful progression. That being the case, they didn't have the wherewithal or the opportunity to say, you know, let me tell you what I want. So in that case, we assume the best of intents. We assume that they would have wanted to do more, and so based on that, we'll take from them necessary to do beyond the call of immediate duty, but the call of what of being a mensch would be as well. Fascinating over here, and this also sort of tells us a very important rule, which is that it's best to plan these things ahead of time. It avoids lots of problems later on. So that's what the Gemara says. Then the Gemara says, wait a second, what is Dover Acher? So there's wife, children, and Dover Acher. What is Dover Acher precisely? So the Gemara says, Ma Dover Acher, Rav Chista Amar, Ze Tachshit, Rav Yosef Amar, Ze Tztaka. So what's this thing that is also taken from the assets when a person is in not a sound state of mind, but is not taken from a person who is AWOL, has disappeared, is either tachshit or tzedakah. What is tachshit? Tachshit means to say not the immediate responsibilities that a husband has towards his wife in terms of basics, but perfume, making her feel that she can take care of herself. That is maybe not necessarily a chiyuv, but would be taken from their assets in such a situation. So the Gemara makes the following observation: Mando Amar Tachshit Kol Sheken Tzedakah. The one who says that he would give her perfume would certainly say that from the assets Tzedakah would be taken. Mando Amar Tzedakah. The one who would say that she should give Tzedakah, while Tachshit Yavinon La. The one who says that Tzedakah would not be given, right? then Tachshit, she then would certainly be given to Loi Nichole to Naval. She would not be happy with his wife being in a state of disgrace. So the Gemara says, Rashi actually quotes an interesting debate as to where this statement was made. Was the statement made on the person who has dementia, or is it about the person who leaves? Is it talking about what is given or not given? And the Kol Shekein will work in opposite directions. The Kal V'chomer will work in opposite directions. Be it as it may, we're not going to go into the nitty-gritty of that right now. Okay, so this is what the Gemara says. So it sounds pretty clear from the Gemara that a person is not in a stable state of mind. Beis Din will enter. Now, it is interesting, by the way, the role of Beis Din. You know, today's kind of Beis Din is, you know, that place that people go when there's a dispute. But Beis Din used to be a much more central institution in society. Like, if you go to countries where there is a centralized Jewish community, unlike America. So, for instance, if you go to England, if you go to South Africa, where the community is small enough, there's a centralization of the establishment. And the Beis Din becomes, so to speak, the conduit for many aspects of life. So, for instance, in England and in South Africa, you can't get married unless you go to the Beis Din, and the couple has to go through a marriage course before going to the Beis Din. Basics, like things that are basic. A lot of the stock of the entire community goes through the Beis Din system. So it's a centralized force, or kashrus goes through it. It's not like these independent organizations, right? Which is why America is sort of like a capitalistic Judaism, where all the stock institutions are all capitalistic, all wonderful people and wonderful people doing it, but it wasn't the community saying, we need this, let's deputize this process. So the Beis Din represents the community and now enters in order to facilitate these things for the community. That's the way it used to always work, and that's the way it works in smaller communities. So the question is, what is the mechanism they use? Like, so how do they do that? What does it mean they go down to your nechasim, literally, and do this? So the truth is we actually use a model which is very helpful for us to appreciate. So let's take a look at the next source, which is the Rambam. The Rambam describes that a shoyter, a person who is not of sound mind, ain mikra mekach, if they go out and use their credit card and buy something, we do not have to honor that sale, right? So we don't say, oh, well, they sold you the grand piano. No, right? Because they didn't know what they were doing when they pulled out their credit, when they accepted your check for $50. Right? So which is what happens in these situations. And mimkoroi mimkar, if they sell something, their acquisition and their selling is not something we honor. V'ein matanoso kayamas. They said they gave you their boat. No, that doesn't mean they gave you their boat, because they don't know what they're not in a state to be able to give this in such a situation. So therefore, what do we need to do in such a situation? Based in ma'amidim apitropos l'shoitim kederesh ma'amidim l'katanim. So Beis Din will establish some guarantor or steward for the assets, who will therefore be the person making decisions on behalf of them. Obviously, this person has to be chosen with discretion. And if a person, and it's obviously better to avoid this situation by doing this yourself, right? Meaning to say, it would be better for everybody to say, in the event that I am no longer of sound mind or I'm not able to make decisions, so-and-so will be my proxy, right? It's much better to do in such situations. It avoids a lot of complication, because what happens if there happen to be five children and each of them thinks that they should be that? Now somebody else has to make a decision as to who the proxy is. Very complicated, but not so easy. But let's say the absence of this, which is unfortunately most cases where people do not make plans, then Beis Din will have to come in and say, well, we're going to have an apitropos, we'll have a guardian for the property as well, like we do for Ketanim. In fact, the Aruch HaShulchan on this makes observation that it is more consequential to have an apitropos for a shoyter, a person of unsound mind, than even for children. Because a child has some degree of logic. It may be immature logic, but there is a degree of logic. Whereas when it comes to a person who, you know, Rachman al-Litzvan is in dementia, if a person's further along that there is no decision-making capacity that they can make. So it's even more necessary to have an apitropos. So which leads us to the question is, well, what is the role of an apitropos? What is the role of this guardian of assets? So in order to do this, what we need to do is we need to sort of step out of the ksubas sugya and go to the general notion of apitropos itself, which appears many times in Shastan, is a very, very complicated sugya. This sugya, one of the places that it's focused on is in the Mishnah in Gittin. The Mishnah is asking, what is the purview of the role of an apitropos? How far does it go? What is their responsibility? Till when and up till when? Are they allowed to be involved in the assets as well? Now, the case the Gemara is talking about, or the Mishnah is talking about, is the assets of Yesomim, right? So we're talking about Ketanim, which will be young minors who are now the recipients of assets lo aleinu, because there's no longer a parents to steward this. So what do you do in such a situation? So the Mishnah tells us in source 5, so let's say they're in a foster home, or the parents established, their parents established to the guardian would be in their absence. That guardian or that foster parent will be in charge of taking maaser from their, to tithing their property. So let's say they have a field, and the field comes into full bloom. It's a fruit field, an orchard, or the tithing will be the responsibility of the guardian. So you say, okay, so how much flexibility do they have in relation to the assets of the Yosimim? So the Gemara goes on and gives us a list, which is a helpful list to create a general, sense, a set of rules. The Gemara it goes on to say, Vatani the Brisa tells us, Hapitropin, the guardians, Tormin umasrim, lahachil v'loilaniach. They're able to take tithes in order to feed, but not to stockpile, which means that as necessary to sustain the orphans, who are the recipients, the beneficiaries of this estate, they are able to take trumas and maasrim, but they're not able to do it just in order to stockpile, right? Just to be able to sort of long-term investing. The umoichrin lohem behema avodim shvachos batim sadois ukramim la'achil, and they're able to turn, we'll call it investments, into liquid assets, right? So if let's say there's a farm, there's a house, there's a field, there's a vineyard, they're able to sell that if they need liquidity for what? For immediate use. But they don't just have the right to start selling just because there's a good investment coming up. I hear there's a great that's not a right. Again, they can sell food to in order to feed, which is interesting, because I think what that probably means is that they're going to sell for more cultivated food, right? So in the case of, let's say, they have yainos or shmonim slasos, maybe something which is more usable for the yesamim would be all right. And then finally, v'oisem noim ul lulav, arava, sukkah, tzitzis, and let's say the orphans need basic religious articles in their life, they're able to use their estate to buy this on their behalf. So we have a kodova shiesh la kitzva. Anything which has got a ceiling, anything which has, we know how much it costs. La'asuye shofar. They say they need a shofar. Comes the season. V'loikrenayim sefer Torah. They need to buy a sefer Torah. Now today, I don't know, sometimes you go to some esrog markets. I don't know if it's yesh la kitzva, Sefer Torah is post-COVID. I don't know. But something which has got a kitzva, right? It says, V'loikrenayim sefer Torah, tefillin and mezuzah, v'kodova shiesh la kitzva, la'atuye megillah. So any religious articles which are fixed prices, they are able to buy for them. However, the Gemara then goes on to say, the Gemara says, but not, but they're not allowed to use the assets to pay to stocker. Is that interesting? So not allowed to use the assets for stocker or anything which has no kitzvah. What doesn't have a kitzvah? Rashi says, there's never an end to the amount of destitute people, unfortunately. Unfortunately, there's always going to be needy recipients. That being the case, then they don't have the right to do that, because it's going to end up, the whole property will be gone. Meaning the guardian's going to, if the guardian opens up their door and says, anybody, any stocker collector comes here, from, 24-6, there'll be somebody at the door.
It's limited and, to Maaser.
Very good question. Excellent question.
And that's derived from Maaser Sheni.
Very good. So Moshe's asking a good question. We'll come back to in a second. But it sounds like, on the most basic level, is that the guardian does not give stocker because it has the capacity of sort of an unending possibility. Interesting observation here. Yeah.
We already learned that ma'asik sofim is not halacha.
Good. Well, it is halacha, but the Torah does not demand it biblically. The question is, what is the model rabbinically that they move after? We're going to come back to your point as well, Chai, because this is actually addressed Moshe's point, actually, Be'ezrat Hashem. Well, this is fascinating, because now you see an interesting divergence. Do you notice that? So when it comes to the estate of a deceased person whose estate is now privy to their orphans, the guardian in this situation does not give tzedakah. But, interestingly, when they're alive in a state that they're not able to make decisions, we do see an interesting thing that you do. That's the Gemara says in Ksubas, is you do give tzedakah, which would lead us to a question as to why there might be that divergence. It is worthwhile knowing that there are exceptions to this rule. There are exceptions to this rule. So, for instance, the Gemara in Babasra is talking about taxation, tzedakah taxation. So, again, when there was centralized community, as opposed to the way it works now, where you know people are incentivized to give tzedakah by their names being on things and recognition necessarily. There are many good of heart, but it just that's the way it works. It's sort of a capitalistic system of tzedakah giving. In the old days, it didn't work like that. The way it worked is, if you live here, you give tzedakah, right? You're part of the community, this is how it works. There's a tamchui, there's a kupa, these are basic, there's a soup kitchen, there's a collect. These are things which the community organizes, has people in charge of, and everybody who lives here pays towards those things because that's how community works. Today, unfortunately, we have to have dinners and we have to and recognize people in order to do the things which, in America, which were for granted in a regular community. So, if the question the Gemara is asking is who is included in, we'll call that taxation for tzedakah, and how long does that have to be there? So, for instance, how long do you have to live in a community to be under the umbrella of the responsibility of that community's tzedakah collections? That's the Gemara's question. And who's included? Who has an exemption from tzedakah as well? So the Gemara is asking the question about what happens if you have a family which does not have parents. So there's children, they have an estate, but there's no parents in this case. So the Gemara talks about how Rabbah would levy tzedakah for the estate that he was in charge of, the community that he was in charge of in Bavel. They said, wait a second. We know that you're not supposed to take tzedakah from the assets of your son. So he says, yes, but in this case, his words are, la'ach shuvinhu ka avidna. I'm doing it, la'ach shuvinhu, which means to make them important. What does that mean? So in this case, he felt that it would create a shem tov for basic contributions, what are called fixed contributions to the community. He felt that it made them feel that they're included in the communal assets. They include in the communal business. So that when they grow up, they will have, it's not like they're excluded from the appeals going on and they are absent. No cards are sent to them. No, no, no. They are card-carrying members of the community as represented by the guardian. So there seems to be an exception to this rule when it's for their good, right? Which, of course, is a little gray, but that would be an exception. Just worthwhile being aware of this exception. There are a few other exceptions. So like the Ramah brings in Shulchan Aruch, let's say there's fixed tax of tzedakah as well, like these cases where it's not that it's waiting for people to come to you, but if you belong in this community, you need to support the local soup kitchen. That would be, because that's a kitzvah, right? There's a ceiling to that. Okay, but be as it may. So the question is, so what's the halacha? So look at this Rambam, and this is where it will lead us into like the thought process behind this. The Rambam tells us in the end of Hilchos Nach La'os, in the 11th parak of the laws of inheritance, he tells us the following. Let's look at these two halachas and then take a step backwards. He says, Apiotropin, Oisin Nektanim Lulav, Sukkot, Tzitzis, Shofar, Sefer Torah, Tfilin, Mezuzos, Megillah. So the apiotropin, the guardian, a steward of the assets, will take all religious articles out of the estate. Anything which has got a fixed price. So these are not really, the child is not really in a state where they have to do these things, but as a part of their education, these are done as well, even though they're not the age of bar or bat mitzvah. But anything which is not of a fixed amount is not taken from the states. The estate. The Rambam then goes on to the next halacha, which is a person who cannot make sound decisions intellectually, based in poskin alot stock im yaroi, but the based in will collect stock from the apiotropos in a case where it is roi, which means to say, how would you translate roi in this case? It's appropriate. So appropriate would probably mean a degree of means, right? Right. If they have the means to, if the assets are disappearing, might not be the case, but that's what the Rambam says over here. So the question number one we have to ask ourselves is why is it different? Like the Rambam is lining these two back to back, right? The Gemara in Gittin, the Gemara in Ksubos, and he's saying that when it comes to the state of the deceased, we don't give tzedakah. When it comes to the state of a live person who's not in sound mind, we do give tzedakah. Same entity, same based in, same apitropos essentially as well. Yes, sorry.
Could it be that we were talking about the person who's a shota is still alive, so you want to give tzedakah in that the way the man would give it or the person would give it, but when a person goes on to the yam, presumably at some point he's going to be declared dead.
Right.
In which case,
if possible,
the wife isn't the heir; it's the children who's the heir. And if the children had been grown, then it would have been up to the children to make sure that she was taken care of. If they are younger, so they're not given anything, but at some point they will be given everything.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Meaning to say, yeah, it's a complicated because it's not always easy to declare somebody dead. Unfortunately, that's one of the problems, because if they really disappear, it's a real problem. It's like a Guna question. But yes, you're saying, but for all intents and purposes, they will be the future recipients, right? As opposed to when the person's dead, they already are in a certain sense, right?
Well, when the person's alive, he still has to take care of his wife.
Yes. Oh, I see. Got it. Okay, good.
So he's making. And when he's dead, eventually they're going to get it. And until they do get it, or until he's declared dead, or maybe they never will be, there's no means for the wife to get the money except from her husband.
Very good. Very good.
While she's alive.
So it has to be set up in such a way. A very, very, very tenable suggestion. You're right, because there are two recipients essentially, two major recipients, already three. There's wife, children, and then community, right? That's the outer concentric circle, right? And so how do you balance the two? And it depends on how it's set up and what the future is going to look like too.
So in American law, the first thing is you say, is the person who's not well, do they have
taken care of
for themselves?
Yep.
Then you go to the wife and children. And then you look at the history of his payments. But the first question always is whether there's enough money.
For themselves.
And you start with the person who's not well. And then you go from there.
That makes sense. It's interesting. In those days, medical considerations and aids didn't seem to be part of it, because it was much more of a, we'll call it family system, right? So if a person wasn't well, where would they be? They would be in the house with everybody else, and everybody taking care of that.
In this place,
you're right. Yes, correct. And societies which have bifurcated the system as well. Yes, Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, to me it seems to be a fundamental difference between the two cases. When you have a cousin, he never was obligated to do any mitzvahs yet. The Beis Din is actually coming in and appointing this apotropos, and they're in lieu of a parent, right? So the cousin, until he grows up, never had any obligation. I've only been shown.
It's almost the opposite, right?
But a person that loses his mind had the obligation his entire life.
Right, so it's actually interesting. So you're pointing out that one is a progression and the one is a regression,
exactly.
Right? So so that might also indicate the difference over here, which is fascinating, right?
Shumchinuch is a...
very good.
It's an obligation, but it's not an obligation on the person.
Excellent point. So, I mean, these are all of the considerations which are taken into account. I would say that actually the Lubavitcher Rebbe actually has an article I came across on this on Parshas Pinchas when it talks about the halachas of Nachlois, and he makes a very, very beautiful observation. He asks Moshe's question, which is, he says like this: look, what do you mean Eino Kitzvah? Tzedakah has rules. If you go to halachas of tzedakah, there are rules as to how much you give. Let's say a regular person, a person who's sound of mind, right? What's to stop them from giving away everything? They're just a generous person. The answer is, there's rules. You there's rules as to how much you give. So why don't we just transpose those rules to the estate? Like, why is it you're saying it's ain't not kitzvah by the estate of the yosimim? It's not correct. That's not accurate. So he says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, really remarkable insight. Listen to this. He says the notion of yesh lo kitzvah ve'ein lo kitzvah is not a halacha in halachas of tzedakah at all, because tzedakah has a kitzvah. He says, what is the reason, Josh, coming to your point, what is the reason that we give tzedakah from that we get all these religious items, the lulav, the sukkah, the Torah, the tefillin, from the state of the Yosemim? Why? What's the reason? The Rambam says it. He says explicitly, they're not obligated, but... You're mechanech them. You're showing them that this is the way you're going to grow up, and this is what you're going to spend on. These are priorities, right? Not just season tickets. You're going to be getting tefillin, right? That's what you're essentially saying, right? He says the getter of Yesh Lakitzvah in Kitzvah is a knob of tuning in the halachas of chinuch, which means it's confusing to a child to understand that I sometimes give, I sometimes don't give, and if it's fixed, yes, and if it's not, and this person, yes, and this person, no. That's confusing. That's very confusing. So we say, in chinuch, we suspend those things which are not more finite, not more clear. That's what's going on in the Gemara. Is that a remarkable insight? That's the way he understands the Gemara, right? Yes, when they get to 13 and or 12, or when they get to a respectable age legally, then we're going to teach them the complexities of tzedakah, which is a very complex topic. But getting a lulav and tzitzis is very easy, right? That is black and white. Chinuch is more complicated when it's gray, when especially when it comes to guardianship, right? Brilliant, right? So that leads us back to the other question now is, okay, but if that's the case, so that when you come to the assets of a person who is not sound of mind, so there's no chinuch, right? There's no mitzvah of chinuch. In fact, it's worse than that. Not only is there no chinuch, says the Rav Yoshev, and actually I'm thankful Rabbi Kalman Lalfa, I was just discussing with this, he happens to be writing on this topic in Halacha on Patience and Dimension, I haven't discussed this, he pointed out this to Rav Yoshev. Rav Yoshev on the Gemara asks the basic question. Take a look at Source 10. He says, he goes to the Machane Ephraim, who says, Tamala Kesem Mishnah, he says, Darei Shoita Eina Mechuev Klal B'mitzvos. What is the halachic legal status of a person who is not sound of mind? They don't, they're part of a mitzvah. There's no obligation whatsoever on them to do mitzvahs, which makes sense. Which makes sense. That's one of the three categories, right? Cheresh Shota V'Katan is always that category in the Mishnayos of a person who's not obligated in mitzvahs. So then by what value, by what need are you taking tzedakah? There's no chinuch now, right? So it seems even less than the situation of a state which has a katan in it. So why would you be giving tzedakah? Why would you be doing all these things? That's the question. That's the critical question we need to ask on our entire sugya, right? Not even in comparison to the children, but just by objectively, what is the motivating factor over here in halacha? That yes. Okay, so very good. So says the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah was Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Karo wrote on the two most central bodies of halacha before he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. Central body number one he wrote on was the Rambam Mishnah Torah. He wrote a pirush called the Kesef Mishnah. The central body number two was the Tur, and he wrote the Beis Yosef. After doing that, then he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. Right, so just summarizing all of known halacha, then he created the Shulchan Aruch. A really remarkable achievement. So says the Kesef Mishnah, Rav Yosef Karo, in Source 11. He says, he's on the halachas of the Nachla Oyster. That Rambam we learned about the fact that the person not sound of mind, we give tzedakah. He says, wait a second. He says, I run beperek nara shinispatza. So the Rabbeinu Nissim, that's the of Gerona, who wrote on the Gemara and the Dapi Arif, disagrees with the Rambam. Now, by the way, just as an interesting aside, when I was in Yeshiva, I went to Keren B'Yavnes. The founding Rosh Yeshiva of Keren B'Yavnes was a tremendous person by the name of Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht. Josh, you went, right? So when he used to learn this parak, it was the fourth parak in Ksubos. So there was, I remember at the Purim spiel, they used to always say how the difference between the Israelis, like, you know, the nowadays Israelis, and Rav Goldwicht, who came from, you know, Eitz Chaim in Yerushalayim, you know, the cloister of the Yeshiva Yashan, right? He was this remarkable character who was able to come out of the old world and create the Torah necessary for the new world. That was what was remarkable about him. So one of the things I used to joke about him was I said, I never understood this perek because why was he talking about a young lady who exploded? Because the words he used to say is Narush Nispoitutza, which is, so the Israelis would be Narush Nispatata. That's the way that I would say it. But anyway, so when I come to this parak, this is one of the observations that was made. So just to talk about the clash of cultures, not the clash, but I would say actually, in fact, the convergence of the old Yeshiva Yashan and Yeshiva Chadash. Keren B'Yavnes was the first Hezder Yeshiva. Everything else after that flowed. You know, so just understand the context of things. So he says, he asks, but wait a second, the Ran disagrees with the Rambam, and he says, Kosal Dibur Rabbeinu. He asks on the Rambam, on Maimonides, v'lo yadati lama de la rav chista de amar tachshit ni de abraisakai efshad de davar acher De Omar Marukva Gabi Nishtate, Hachinami Meforishle Ula Meforishle, Vatakshit Shamanu Avot Stokominayan, I can't show. So it comes back to the two Girsos in Rashi. Now, without getting too technical, but what he's saying is like this. If you say that the Rim of the Gemara says, the opinion who says Tachshit Kol Sheken Stokka, the one who says Stokka Loi Kol Sheken Tachshit, right? Remember that over there? What is that statement made on? So the basic understanding is other than the Braisa. What's the Braisa's case? The case is a person Sholach Lemedinasayom, a person who's AWOL, a person who's disappeared. So in that case, you can debate as to whether you give Stokka or what is not included. What are you not giving? You're not giving Tachshit, you're not giving Stokka. But Lekuli Alma, then, when you reflect that back to the case where you do give, which is the case of Mishnah Nishtata, there's no indication to say you should really be giving stock. Meaning, just technically speaking, where the Gemara says it. So why should that be the case? Why does the Rama say it is necessary? He says the possibility is, Shetam Rabbeinu, the Rama holds this because, Mishum Divin Stoma, Kol Odom Nicholei Lemevad Mitzvah Vimoinei. It's the assumption we make. This is true legally as well. We say, look at the history. Look at this person. This is a generous person. This is a person who always participated in appeals. This is the person who would want this to be done for them. So, which is interesting because you say to yourself, wait a second, but they're not chayev, right? Right now, you're not going to send the appeal card to their address because there's no halachic responsibility. So says Suri, which I think is 100% correct, is that there's a difference between obligation and reward. Those are completely different things. That person may not be obligated because there are waves of responsibility, but there's a notion of volunteering, right? There's a notion of receiving reward even if you're not mechuyev in it. It may not be the same level of reward, right? The Gemara says, "Gadol mitzuvah v'oyse mimishu'ene mitzuvah v'oyse." This is a person, she'ene mitzuvah v'oyse. How are they doing it? By the fact that the guardian's doing it. It's still good for them. In fact, I was just talking about this to Machavisa Rabbi Natan Bain, and he pointed out that an interesting Rashi that's found in the fifth parak of Vayikra. It's talking about the halachas of karbonos that you bring about knowledge that you had which you did not disclose. But the Rashi says in the boxed section over here, he says, he quotes Rabbi Elazar Nazaria. He says, "Ki siksor kitzircha b'sodeh v'shachachto omer b'sodeh." It's all the mitzvah shichcha. The mitzvah shichcha is one of the only mitzvahs you can perform by not knowing about it, right? So, because it's you leave it in the field and you remember afterwards, then you leave it. You're not allowed to go back for it, right? The Torah tells us in such a case, Hashem is going to bless you. Why does it go that far? Kava kos of bracha. The Torah is telling us there is a bracha. There's a bracha to be found for a person who fulfills a mitzvah even without being aware of it. Let's say that the person had in the hem. Now, this is how people used to always carry cash, because you know it was dangerous. You weren't carrying checks in those days. You could cancel. You carry cash, right? So they would hem it into their garment. Let's say they're walking along, and v'nafla hemenu, and it slips out. It wasn't sewed in well, and there's a gold coin lying in the middle of the public domain. Umatza uneven ispiring spot. Now that gives three meals for that poor person who finds it. He says, "Harei Hakadosh Baruch Hu." The Torah's card, and this is the Medrash Halacha, says that person receives a reward. I had no idea. I've had no intent. But ultimately, it was actualized. And I think that's precisely what's happening up here. You say to the person, this person is not in a state to give tzedakah, but we know that they used to. We try to put ourselves, the guardian is going to put themselves in that place. Beistin is now going to assume the role of what they would have done. And even though they're not obligated, they're certainly receiving a reward. And for that, therefore, we do it as well. Yes, but John.
It seems obvious to me that the person who died, who left his installment,
true. Well, but the truth is that in that case, it's not demanded because it's only mitzad chinuch, right? So mitzad chinuch, we're not going to bat. No question. When they grow up, they're going to pay back. They're going to, and most of the cases they do as well. John, David.
From a practical standpoint, even this, you talk about schar al mama. It's a practical standpoint. You take a person who has no mental capacity, you bring him to shul, you're a shofar, you put a lulav in his hand, and you have to shake it. Okay. No downside, but if you're talking about taking from the estate,
good.
It could be practical implications.
100%, and that's why, that's why it says imhoya roi. The Rambam says it's tempered by that statement because it's not all cases are roi. There has to be a cautious judgment there as well. Yeah, hang on, we haven't got to the case yet. I just want to do one last idea. Yeah.
It seems as if we take it a step further. Well, of course, we would do it for someone who's not a sale line. We're doing it for people who aren't even here with us to give them schar.
No, we aren't. What do you mean, which case?
We learn for them, we give tzedakah for them.
Yeah.
Actually, not even.
That's true.
We take it a step further.
You're right. So it's a post-death as well. You're right. So the truth is that a person who is who's deceased has no obligation, right? There's no obligation whatsoever. But as you're pointing out, we still do that. Now that's vicariously giving them the opportunity to continue. We learn Torah, we give tzedakah, we do Torah avodah and gemilas chasadim on their behalf, and therefore their actions vicariously continue through us as the vehicle. And that you're 100% right. Here it's even better though, because yeah, they're still in the olam ha-ma'aseh. It's not as if as if there needs to be a reassessment of the portfolio on an annual basis to see what had been achieved and accrued of the dividends because of the investments. Here it's actually they're here. So I think it's even more powerful, which is what you're pointing out. Now, it happens to be there's another observation. This is Rav Eliyashiv's observation on this Gemara. I don't know how many times Rav Eliyashiv and the Lubavitcher Rebbe go in the same shir always, but I just want you to appreciate that. It's so beautiful to be able to learn all this Torah to together. So the Rav Eliyashiv actually makes the following observation, and he says in Source 13, he says, "V'chomer akusha." He says, "This is a very tough question. Why does the Gemara demand that we give tzedakah from the assets of the Yisamim?" He says, "Yitachin amar." He says, "Possible al pi mashi di'isa b'sifrei, b'muva b'toisas b'periktanis, v'zelushon ha'sifrei aser ta'aser." We just read this in the parasha yesterday in the parasha Zrei. You should give tithes. It is kol mas tvuas zarecha. Eini ela tvuas zarecha shachayev b'maaser ribis prakmati v'kol shar revachim minayin. We know that the Torah is talking to an agricultural society. So if you have grain, give tithes. What about money? It says Talmud Lomar es kol, including that is all. Yeah, the words of the pasuk. Umevuar b'sifrei dechiyuv ma'aser k'savim iskish lemaaser sheni lemaaser oni demaaser dagon. Now this is what Chayo is saying: is ma'aser k'savim ma'aser of the money that the profits that we take in, is that a chiyuv? So the answer is Zechiv Drabonon, and where is it learned from? It is learned from Maaser. There's two sources. One is Staka, and the other one is Maaser itself. He says, if that's the case, V'nei b'Maaser Dagon Pashat, D'gam mi'peros shel shoyted, l'akhin ma'aseros l'levim al'aniyim, d'areko achal achiv al peros atzman. What an observation. He says that when it comes to Maaser, when it comes to grain, the responsibility is not actually on the person giving the maaser, it's on the grain itself. The grain needs to be tithed itself.
It's like a matter.
It's to matter it, which is what it's on the chesed, on the gavra, if you want to say it in those words. And so therefore, he says, if we're going to look at the assets of this person over here who's not in a state to give it or to decide to give it, really, technically speaking, it may not be that they are obligated, but their assets are obligated to be tithed, right? If profit is coming in, there needs to be in the same way we learn it from grain, not as a function of tzedakah, but as a function of maaser, which is a part of this. Now, if you'll go back, just follow me for a second, back to the Kesef Mishnah, I believe the Kesef Mishnah says this. Without all the fancy footwork here, he actually says, where is this Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam in Nachla Os? Sorry, my version is a little different here, and I did not keep page numbers. Here we go. I can't see it right now in mind. Let me go to these. What was that? No, I just have a different set of notes here. Okay, so this is source 11. So the if you take a look at the third paragraph which I created, he says the other reason is v'gam ki mamona shel adam meshubad lasos mimenet tzedakah. The money of a person has a certain, we'll call it, spiritual lean upon it to give tzedakah. So it's less about the person and about the assets themselves. Fascinating. And he says, by the way, now, as an aside to your point, sorry, why is the person who got his AWOL different? He says, when a person is absent, and the reason why you don't say that is true about the assets of a person who's not present and we need to take care of their family is because for all likelihood, they're probably giving tzedakah there. So you don't need to represent them in this. Now, unfortunately, sort of in a cynical way, that's often the case, right? The husband who's disappeared and has left their family languishing is busy donating buildings in another country, right? But nonetheless, this is so in that case, We, as the Beis Din, do not have the, so to speak, right to go to the assets to take tzedakah. But for the person who is of no, there's no way, he's not giving anywhere else, she is not giving anywhere else, they used to give, it's not just what we assume to give them schar, it's the fact that the property itself demands restitution to that degree. Now, the halacha, coming back to the point that David was raising a moment ago, let's go back to the halacha, and you'll just see this, how this plays itself out in halacha. The Torah quotes this, but take a look at the Shulchan Aruch in source 16. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Mishin nishtata nishchar is poiskin nishtatach shidin." The person who is no longer of salman, they would take care of the wife, not just the regular chiyuvim. And then he says in source 16, the Shulchan Aruch in Chayshim Mishpat. By the way, I don't know if you've noticed that in the halachas we looked at we've actually now passed through three different silos of halacha, which is the element of tzedakah, the halachas of tzedakah found in Yoredea. That's what we call ritual obligations to a certain degree. Then when we deal with the responsibility your husband has towards wife and children, that's what's called Evin HaEzer. That's relationships. And then there's the aspect of apitropos, which is guardianship, which is actually Choshen Mishpat. You notice there are three separate halachas. The Raman codifies these in Hilchos Matnos Aniyim, Hilchos Ishus, and Hilchos Nachla Ois as well. Three completely separate topics of halach which converge around this complex. This is why estate planning needs good guidance. you need to be able to have. It's a very complex topic which affects many, many different people. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Hapitropin Oisin Lektanim, Lulav Sukkah Shoy Tzitzis Shofar Vesever Torah, Vetfilin Mezuzos Megillah, Klal Shel Dovar, Kol Mitzvah Asay Sheyesh La Kitzva, Ben Shu Midivrei Zetorah, Ben Shu Midivrei Sofrin, Oisin Nohin Afal Pi She'en Chayavim B'Mitzvah Mikol Elu HaMitzvos Elo Kedei L'Chanchon. This is all verbatim Rambam, right? So he says, the Rambam says, as a function of Chinuch, you give all the mitzvahs which have distinct. When it comes to mitzvah, and as the Rav Rebbe read this, is because there's no chinuch when it comes to gray mitzvahs. In this case, if, like Rav and the Gemara, that they do have a large estate and you want them to feel like they're part of the community and it's good for them, the guardian can, but that's not obligation, right? That was the rabbi case. And finally, based in im hoya ra'oi, if that person is ra'oi. Ra'oi is if it's adequate. So that would take into account would be, is what about their healthcare bill? What about the family? What about all the other aspects which contribute to this? So when a number of months ago when I discussed this, I asked Rav Carmel, Yosef Carmel is the I've based in the Menahel of the network of Bodzidinim called Eretz Chemda, producing incredible amounts of things. There are a lot of very worthwhile responses to read called Shut B'Marei HaBazak, the response of Marei HaBazak, which are actually translated, very available. Rabbi Daniel Mann is translating them. Really, very, very impressive set of contemporary issues. It's one of the highest institutions of learning in the religious Zionist community, which is producing Dayanim of the, you have to have finished smicher from the Rabbanut and have a degree, and then it's 8 years of learning after that just to become a Dayan under this network. Very, very impressive and respected network base. And so when I spoke to Rav Carmel about this topic, he said, and this is his words, he said, while it's proper to give charity from the assets to someone who is not of sound mind, that is only if they have the means for it. That's the halacha that we did. In the situation described, the daughter should first make sure that the mother's needs are cared for and only give the affordable amount. Perhaps it is still correct to give a small amount, but she should use proper discretion, right? Which makes a lot of sense, right? So first you see, what's being taken, what's being eaten away over here. And the halacha of tzedakah is, yes, there's an upper limit of tzedakah, but there's also a lower limit of tzedakah, which is a certain amount. So maybe they may not be giving the same way that they would in their life, because let's say that the mother was of sound mind and there was something else. Let's say the health bills were affecting her in such a way, she probably would decrease the amount of tzedakah she'd be giving as well because of the incredible medical financial billing as well, which is coming in. So it makes a lot of sense, but this would be we'll call it the halachic perspective on this, which is just remarkable also in terms of the logic. I'd like to close with the last halacha the Rambam says in the halachas of Menach La'os. The Rambam says, and this is such an important idea, and I think, Jonathan, you pointed this out as well, which is, Aval bi she'ein apitropos tzarech la'asos cheshbon k'mo shibarno. The question is how much an accounting needs to be done. Does this person need to be submit bills all the time? And so he says technically speaking, they don't need to have a itemized billing for every decision made. Tzarech lachshov beino lebein atzmo. That person needs to look in the mirror every morning. The doctor Elizar harbe me'avim shel elu hayasem shuroi chevar ravos. says that person's going to look in the mirror and realize that they're representing the father of the Yisraelim, and that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's the Reich of Aravos. Aravos is always the most diminished of all the Arba Minim. It's the one that has the least to contribute, is the most vulnerable of them. It needs water so badly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Reich of Aravos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks after Avi Yisraelim. And so when a person is in the place where they're looking after the most vulnerable in society, whether they're orphans at the beginning of life, or whether those the medically and needed and unsound of mind at the end of life, person who's in that position has to be very careful to make sure that they're doing what's in the best interest of that person as well. Anyways, it was just a really fascinating topic, and I hope this gives a little bit of taste to the complexity of this beautiful topic. Thank you so much for being here today.
Good time.
And sorry is available.